Open your Bible to the book of Joshua. It's so funny. Every time I come, I would rather just sit and talk. Can we have an off night that I come and just kind of talk? And I love just talking to people. Josiah, where are you stationed now?
I'm going to be going to Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Fort Bragg.
A couple of years.
Great. Well, thank you.
Back around here.
I'm
doing better.
Yeah, well, thank you for your service. We appreciate it. Let's see. I had another couple. We're going to have a reunion, too. Everybody who's ever been a part of LCF, we're going to have a reunion. Just kidding.
Well, the
27th. The 27th, yeah, that's true. We'll all be together. You already prayed, didn't you, Chad?
I did. I thought of two more announcements.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
One is on December 27th. If you didn't know, all the congregations are going to be meeting together. That's a Saturday night at Park. They meet at 6:30, not 7, I guess. And the other is, and maybe Billy, you can comment on this. This summer we're going to be having a Christian training school, and we're
that's
trying
right.
to get a head count to see.
Yeah. That's right. I've got a couple of announcements I want to make about your announcements. If Joseph was here, we'd go all night doing announcements.
And then I have even one more. How many of y'all have been getting emails from Karen about the church vacation this summer? Okay. I have failed to talk about that, but I want to encourage everybody to try to make time to make it there and get questions about it.
Yes,
Billy.
And I'll give you Karen's phone number. No, our purpose in that family get together is for all of the churches to be together, and we will sit under some very appropriate teaching to knit us together in some of the, I don't want to say deeper things, because the deeper things of God are simple. But just some very simple things. And it's just nice for us all to hear the word together and respond to it. But it also is going to give us an opportunity to spend time with people that have gone on and planted other churches. So we're really looking forward to that. And if I can, go ahead and share something about the widows and orphans. Would that be okay? Y'all aren't in a hurry, are you? Okay. Widows and orphans... you know, forever in our church, we were mostly young people. And everybody was always theoretically wanting to go off and start an orphanage or send money to Timbuktu. And we've always just held everybody back. Because so many things that are done organizationally really create an administrative cost. Whether you know it or not, orphanages have a lot of holiness problems in other countries. And so we've really felt like we need to plant churches until God begins to bring us orphans, widows, and strangers that we can get involved in their life. And so what we generally do, instead of sending $25 to somebody once a month until we forget, we try to find those places where God connects us to be to those people what we need to be. And so we've always encouraged everybody not to just kind of fling your money around to people who market you through a picture of a kid with a big belly, but to really be led of the Spirit. And we are just getting to the place now in our size and in our borders that we're running into things where we're going to need a lot of money. Antonio's wife, Santa, she may remarry, but she has three kids. And until she remarries, we need to take care of Antonio's kids. He was a faithful brother who planted the church in Taipango. And when you take on a widow and her kids, it is costly. to do it for a long time. Now, it's not going to be real costly down there. I think Antonio lived on about $300 or $400 a month, so it's not going to be a killer. But just realize that you shouldn't give your money to things that tug at your fleshly emotional strings. But you really should pursue being led of God to see where you can really give yourself fully to somebody and serve widows, orphans, strangers, and needs that are honest needs and not scams. So thank you all that gave for the Ponders. Paul has been such a faithful member for years, and he's home. I saw him a couple of days ago. He looks good, but it'll be a while before he gets back in the saddle at work. So we'll just keep you abreast of those needs. I guess that's it. Isn't it nice? Isn't it fun? Isn't it joyful to be able to know that you can labor and then translate your labor into money? And to take that money and give it to a lady whose husband just died and has three kids to take care of. What an awesome opportunity. If in your job you're serving your boss, like it tells you in Ephesians chapter 6, that's your service to God. Right there. But then you get this stuff with presidents on it, and then you get to serve God again by blessing somebody. Isn't that neat how God can double your time? So I just encourage you all to not be marketed by organizations, but really be led of the Spirit and look for people that you can get involved with, that you can know them and really lay your life down. Don't do token acts of service. Let God give you as a servant to real people. So, all right, I've been stalling because I know some of y'all are a little slow. Have you found Joshua yet? Good, I'm glad you got there. All right, Joshua chapter... let's start in chapter 6. We are talking about typology. A type is an object, a person, or a particular ceremony that presents a truth in the Old Testament which is taken further and fulfilled, called the antitype, in the New Testament. Most specifically, it centers on Christ. And so you can go through the Old Testament and you can find a lot of people, a lot of positions, a lot of offices. And really, when you get to the New Testament, it talks about Jesus as the fulfillment of the promise made to that person or the fulfillment of that person's ministry. And there's a lot of ways to do it, but let me tell you the safest way to do it, okay? Now, you can really get off on typology. You can start reading through the Bible, and you can say, oh, wow, it says that God created, that God rested on the seventh day. I live at 777 Rainwater Drive, and my phone number is 312-0777, and I just believe that God has put me in the realm of rest for this period of my life. You can't do that. You can't go crazy. And so let me tell you where to start, and it's really safe. It's really safe. Read the New Testament, and where it specifically says, just like Joshua, or just like Melchizedek, or after the order of Melchizedek, and it talks about Jesus in terms of an Old Testament person, that's a good place to start. Do all of those first. And then there are probably some more that you can discern. But first, you go with what's very explicit, that you can see and know for a fact. What the writers of the New Testament saw as types, and they present as types, do that, okay? And so we're doing the book of Joshua. And in Hebrews chapter 7... it talks about Jesus bringing us into the rest. Joshua, it says, if Joshua had brought them into their rest, then they wouldn't have prophesied of another rest to come. And so what that tells us, and I mentioned this the last time we were here, in the Old Testament, Joshua was bringing people into a land, a place where they could rest. They'd been in Egypt, they'd been in the wilderness, And now they were going into Canaan land. It was going to be their land established according to the law of God, and it was going to be a place of rest. But what the New Testament tells us is that wasn't the end of it, that there is an even better rest for you and I. And that what Christ did in bringing us into the land is the real rest. Does that make sense? But the Old Testament remains a place we can go and we can get the backstory, and it really deepens our appreciation of what Jesus has done. Okay? So we're going to go back to the book of Joshua, and I'm going to pick up in chapter 6 and sort of review where I confused you before. And the only thing better than being confused is being confused a second time. How many of you all know the story of the Battle of Jericho? Really the first battle they fought once they crossed the Jordan River. Y'all know the Battle of Jericho? Oh, good. Well, if all the kids know it, then I'm not gonna repeat it. But I'm going to jump in the middle of it then, since you all know the history. Who doesn't know the history? Is anybody that doesn't know the history of the Battle of Jericho? Everybody knows? Okay, good. So let's start in chapter 6. This is, they've come through into the land. They've sent out the spies. They've been circumcised. They've eaten the new corn. Joshua has seen the captain of the host of the army of the Lord and asked that fateful question, are you for us or are you for them? And he responds, nay, but as the captain of the Lord, the host of the army of the Lord, do I come? And the question is, are you for God? And then we go on to this battle, the very first battle. And you know the strategy. The strategy is keep your mouth shut for 6 days. And for good measures, walk around 6 more times with your mouth shut. And then when you hear the trumpet of the Lord, shout. And so with this strategy, they come to that first day. So let's pick up in verse 12. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord, and the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually. And the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the ark of the Lord while the trumpets blew continually. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned unto the camp. So they did for 6 days. So they're walking around, blowing the trumpets, keeping their mouth shut. This is not a typological point. And I'm not going to do any more of these. I just can't resist. I don't necessarily, this is an allusion or an allegory that I'm making up. And it's fine to do that. But I don't believe God really intended this to be a principle that comes from here. But I'm going to share a principle. It is very important that you learn to keep your mouth shut for a long time, rather than go off half-cocked. And to speak in response to the Spirit of God, rather than your need to talk. Okay, that's free. All right, let me keep going. On the 7th day, they rose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city 7 times. And the 7th time, when the priest had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Okay, kids, shout. Come on, all you kids, shout. Yeah. For the Lord has given you the city. And the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. Verse 18, but you keep yourselves from the things devoted to destruction, lest when you have devoted them, you take any of the devoted things and make the camp of Israel a thing for destruction and bring trouble upon it. But all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. Verse 20, so the people shouted and the trumpets were blown. As soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, And the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. Then they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys, with the edge of the sword. They went into that city, and with the edge of the sword, every man, woman, and child devoted to the Lord with the edge of the sword. They went in and killed even people that looked as sweet as this. What do you think about your God now? What do you think about Yahweh now? This is what God did. Thank you. You do good at being sweet. You have got to believe that if you're going to understand the big picture of who God is and what He's doing in the earth. And you have got to let that sink deep in you. This is what God did. They were devoted to the Lord. They were consecrated to the Lord through death. Okay? So let me back up and sort of talk about why God did this, okay? And you've got to understand what's going on. God came to a guy named Abraham, and he said, I'm going to make a great nation out of you, and I'm going to make your nation a blessing to all nations, and I'm going to give you a land. As a matter of fact, it's the land that you're in. So Abraham was walking around in this place called Canaan, and he said, I'm going to give this land to you, and this is going to become your nation. And then out of this nation, you are going to bless the rest of the world. But if you'll look in chapter 15 of Genesis, then the Lord said to Abram, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. Okay, so here we are in Joshua, maybe about 1300 B.C. 500 or 600 years earlier, God had told Abraham, I'm going to give you this land, but I can't give it to you now. As a matter of fact, you're going to have a grandson, and he is going to go down and be in bondage for 400 years somewhere else, and then I'm going to bring you back and give you this land. And when you come back, you're going to kill everybody that's here. Now keep reading, though. This is very interesting. But I will bring judgment on the nation that they serve. That would be Egypt. And afterward, they shall come out with great possessions. Look at this. We're talking nations. Here you are. You don't even have a kid yet. But I'm going to take you, and I'm going to put you down into another land, and you're going to become a nation. And then that nation is Egypt is going to oppress you, and I am going to destroy that nation and deliver you. And then I'm going to bring you back here, and you're going to destroy this nation, and I'm going to give it to you. But keep reading, and we'll get to the verse that I want you to meditate on in a minute. 15, as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried in a good old age. And they shall come back here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. The iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. So here you are. These are some pretty raunchy people. But I can't give you this land because they haven't got to the end of it yet. I'm going to send you away for 400 years, but while you're gone, they're going to get worse and worse and worse. And it's only until their iniquity is complete that I will give it to you. And this whole idea of iniquity becoming complete is very important in understanding how God works in history. Okay? You will remember Noah. How long did Noah preach righteousness before God sent the flood? He worked on that boat for years and preached righteousness and gave all kinds of opportunity. Remember Sodom and Gomorrah? Remember when God sends the angels and he says that he won't do anything unless he reveals it to his prophet? And Abraham says, yeah, but what if there's, I forget where he begins. Does anybody know the numbers? 50? 50 down to 10. But he goes through, Lord, if there is a certain number of righteous people, will you not destroy it? And he keeps going. But there's not enough people to preserve it. So the angels go down and they bring Lot out, and God rains on Sodom and Gomorrah. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that description in Romans chapter 1, where it talks about although they knew God and that they chose not to keep him in, they chose not to worship him as God, but they worshiped the creature rather than the Creator, he gave them over to their iniquities, and their iniquity was filled up. In other words, God preserved them. God preached to them. God tried to help them. But no matter what God did, no matter how he revealed himself, they would not. And so finally God said, the only reason you're not going crazy is because my grace is keeping you from it. You don't want to respond to me, I'll back off and we'll see what happens. And it got so bad that their iniquity was full. And that word iniquity, I'm no Hebrew scholar, but as I understand it, it is a word that has to do with a wickedness that deserves punishment. It's almost the word sometimes is used as punishment. It's like perverseness. So it became so perverse that God said, man, this can't go on. Remember at Babel, they were going to get to heaven, or at least they thought they were. So God is not, His wrath does not boil over without his decision for it to boil over. You see? It does boil over, but only when he decides, well, I've held my wrath back long enough. But if I don't go ahead and act, then it will ruin the whole world. Okay? And so their iniquity was full, and then he brings Joshua back. And in Deuteronomy, right before they go in, there's a couple of verses. Are you with me? You with me, Isabel? All right. If I get off, you just raise your hand and say you're doing it again, all right? You know, everybody loves you. They really do. Just because you're straightening me up. Everybody. I've got this one professor. I told Brenda, I said, Brenda, you're as bad as my professor. He only understood 86% of what I was trying to say. So I'm working on it. I really am. So in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 2. And when the Lord your God gives them over to you, and you defeat them, then you must devote them. All right, so that was way back 500 years. Now, it's right before they go in, Moses is preaching to them, reminding them of things that have been said. You defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. You shall make no covenant with them and show no mercy to them. Show no mercy to them. Deuteronomy 20:17. But you shall devote them to complete destruction, the Hittites and the Amorites, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, as the Lord your God has commanded you. God commands you to kill them because they're going to ruin the world. You got to believe that that is true, and that is part of the character of Yahweh. the character of Jesus. So Joshua, as a type of Jesus, bringing us into our rest, is now leading them into this battle. And let me share a couple of other verses with you. I mentioned Romans 1:18. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. So God reveals His wrath against those who suppress the truth, who are given chance after chance and they don't want to follow Him. And then 1 Thessalonians 2:16 says, it's talking about the Jews. How many of y'all know when Paul went to Thessalonica, what happened? They couldn't find him, but they attacked this guy, Jason, and drug him before the authorities, and the brothers got Paul out of town. Paul goes down to Berea. These Jews from Thessalonica find he's in Berea. They go down there and start stirring up trouble. And so Paul is writing back a letter to the Thessalonians, and he talks about those who, verse 16, by hindering us from speaking to the Gentiles that they might be saved, so as always to fill up the measure of their sins. So as always to fill up the measures of their sins, but wrath has come upon them at last. And so we don't know specifically historically what he's referring to, but we do know that he's saying, these guys that followed me around and caused all that trouble, they just kept doing it until finally it got bad enough that the wrath of God has been poured out upon them. This may have been about 50 AD, and there's some things that happened specifically to the Jews during that time. But Paul is, these guys knew what Paul was talking about, who he was talking about. And he said, you know, they just kept at it and at it and at it until God went wham, and his wrath came down on them. We don't know what it was, but more than likely they were kicked out of Rome, or maybe even some of them were persecuted. It's in keeping with the rest of the book because later on he talks about eventually where it's all headed. 2 Thessalonians 1, 7 through 10. Grant you relief who are afflicted as well as to us when the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven with his mighty angels. Okay? So Paul had talked about a specific historical instance when God's wrath is being poured out. But now he's looking ahead. He's revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, inflicting vengeance on those who do not know God and on those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. They will suffer the punishment of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his might. When he comes on that day to be glorified in his saints and to be marveled at among all who have believed, because our testimony to you was believed. So he writes them one time and he says, look, you're seeing the wrath of God, some of it being poured out on those guys because they just went too far. But let me tell you, there's a day when he's coming back in his glory. And he is going to really inflict his wrath. This is our God. It is very hard to understand him in those terms in a politically correct society when tolerance doesn't mean giving people the right to think the way they want without having to believe that they are right, but that we have to give equality, that we have to believe that every truth is equal. It is very, very hard to say, yes, God killed a bunch of people. He is killing some people right now. And in the end, he is going to secure people to everlasting punishment. You've got to believe that if you're going to understand the big picture and what's going on. That's the review from 2 weeks ago. All right. All right. Now, let's go back. There's something else that's very interesting here. There's something else that goes on. Let me see if I can pull it out in chapter 6. Verse 17. Look at verse 17. And the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. Isn't that nice? Only Rahab the prostitute shall live, because she hid the messengers. Verse 21. Then they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men, women, young and old, sheep and donkeys, with the edge of the sword. Oh, but to the two men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman and all who belong to her, as you swore to her." So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her, and they brought all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel. Isn't that nice? Verse 25. But Rahab the prostitute in her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. You've got to believe that there is ultimate destruction and judgment on iniquity to appreciate that three times in this story, the writer brings the focus back to this. But Joshua was very careful ahead of time to say, don't destroy the house that has the scarlet cord in the window. And then Joshua told the guys, go find that woman and deliver her and her family and everyone who's in her house. And to come back and sum it up and say, and everything was destroyed, but Rahab, the prostitute, and everyone who was with her was delivered. You see why it's important to have the right backdrop? It makes deliverance so much more real. And I think we live in a time when we think, yeah, you know, being a Christian is a happier life, and I'd like people to be happier. I know somebody who's having a tough time, and I think they would no! The wrath of God is being held back from people who are filling up their iniquity. And the wrath of God abides on them. But Lord, how about 50, 40, 30? Lord, let me preach another 10 years. Let me preach another 10 years. And that's where that verse comes in. God is not slack concerning His promise, but He is long-suffering, willing that none should perish. So here's the point. You have got to believe with all your heart in the parts of the Bible, like in Thessalonians, like in Revelation, like in Romans, like in the Old Testament, where it says iniquity will be fulfilled, and when that happens, judgment must come, and judgment is on its way. Sometimes person by person in history, but ultimately a judgment is coming. But in the meantime, here we are. Like Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah, like Noah building an ark, like the apostles sent out to preach the gospel, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be with the return of man. We live in that time. The walls are getting ready to fall down. Joshua is coming, and the end will arrive. But in the meantime, right now, today is the day of salvation. Harden not your heart. Respond to the message of Jesus Christ, which is deliverance from the destruction to come. Now, I doubt there's anybody in here who's on the way to hell. And I'm not trying to scare anybody in here. You know, oh, sister, oh, brother. You know, hell's hot, and, you know. I'm trying to wake some people up. Everything is not okay. Judgment is coming. Your God is a consuming fire. In the end, He will send people into judgment. But there's some prostitute out there that if a couple of spies will show up and tell her about the great works of our God, she'll grab onto your coattails and she'll say, please, please, I do not want the wrath of God to come on my family. What must I do? And you see, the problem with the whole world is it's very simple. They don't trust God. They don't trust God. They trust their prostitution. They trust their job. They trust in the arm of the flesh. They didn't say, go sacrifice a calf. Make sure that you get all the leaven out of your house. They just said, don't worry. We just need to know where you are. As long as we can know where you are, if you believe that God is who He says He is and you want to put your trust in Him, you'll be delivered. And that's what we need to do. We need to go out and we need to find people and help them understand that their iniquity is building up, that their life deserves judgment, but it's because they're serving gods who are not gods. And we need to help them see who our God is. Let me look at a few things with her to maybe give you some points that you can apply in a New Testament fashion. First of all, and I'll do it real quick. Well, I think the first thing I'd like to point out is back in that call in chapter 12, when God calls Abraham, He says, I'm going to make you a nation, and then you're going to begin to bless other nations. Isn't that amazing? Right here where they come in to this place, we're going to set up this nation that's going to bless other nations. What's the first thing they do? They bless an Amorite. This lady's an Amorite. People who sacrifice their kids. But not only is she an Amorite, she is a prostitute. A woman who slept around with men. And you can read books, and when you read those books, it will say, but prostitution was different back then because it was an accepted profession. And yeah, their iniquity was full. It was fine with everybody. Everybody was sleeping around. But she was just as twisted. And that word actually means twisted, perverted, wicked. They had twisted what life was supposed to be, and they were living this twisted life. And the promise of Abraham came on that woman and let her see out of her twistedness that there is a God who is very different from these gods which are shaping and forming us into the stupidity that we're living. All right, let me just look at a couple other things real quick. And I don't know. Point number three, she was a twisted sister. Are there any twisted sisters here? You got life so twisted up that you're drug about by sexual desire? Any twisted brothers here that you're getting drug all over the place by what the gods of this earth have established in your life? The next thing, she believed that Yahweh was the only God. I like the way she says it. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Well, here in chapter 2, let me tell you how it goes. First thing happens, these men come in to this prostitute. Now, God sovereignly led them to this woman who was ready to receive. And so the next thing that happens in the story, or at least in the way it's told, is the king's men show up. As an act of faith, she chooses at that point. Now think about it. They have heard about Og and Sihon, two Amorite kings on the other side of the river, totally obliterated. Okay? And These two spies say, yeah, we're with those people. And she's like, we've heard about you. And the story says that the king's men show up and ask where they are. And can you imagine in that moment? Here she's made her living. She doesn't see herself from our perspective. She sees herself as a person in her society, making a living, got her whole family. But in that moment, she makes a decision. I am choosing today that I am going to reject my city, my king, and my way of life. And then the story goes on. And that's the way the story reads. But then the story backs up, and we see some things have already happened when she makes that decision. And so it says that she said that to them, but she had already put them on the roof and covered them up with flax. All right? And then it even backs up a little further and says, and this is the discussion she had had with them before she said this to the king's men. And I like this discussion. She came up to them on the roof and she said to them, I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the fear of you has fallen upon us and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, everybody in town's heard about it. Word got back, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heavens above and on earth beneath. Your God is God. He's God of the heavens and God of the earth. And why did she know this? Because of the life that those people had lived. Because of the miraculous works that God had done through their lives. Okay? All right. Then the next thing that happens, though, is she comes into contact with some of those people who were doing those mighty works. And they offer an opportunity to become part of the team of God. They offer her the ability to come into this covenant relationship with God that all of the children of Abraham have. And she says, I'm in. God is God, and I want to give my life to Him. Well, you know, you're a prostitute. And we were really hoping that we might run into maybe one of the governors of the city or something. God specifically took them to the heart that was ready. This is not intended from the scripture, but this is me. I think a lot of times we look for people who are pretty good that we think might fit in well with being Christian. Huh? Yeah? No? Think about it. When campus outreach is going on, do you look for the prostitutes? Do you really think those girls that are sleeping around and those boys that are sleeping with them and the pot smokers are going to want to join your group? No. You want the good little Baptist kid who was in youth group all the way through. You really do think you have a better chance with them, right? Yeah? No? Yes or no? How many of you all have really been expecting God to move in the lives of people who are totally twisted? That's where we need to go. We need to work the works of God and expect Him to bring us into relationship with twisted people, because twisted people will see the works of God and say, that's God. This is not. What do I need to do? All right, just a couple more things. She acted on what she believed by renouncing her culture. She trusted in the living God to deliver her. The good thing about it, when she came in, two things happened. She was a point of contact for the rest of her family, and it opened up the door for them. But the other thing that is most miraculous is when you read in the book of Matthew, she had a baby with a Jewish guy. this prostitute got married and had a baby. I think his name was Boaz. And Boaz had a baby, and I think his name was Obed. And then Obed had a baby. What was his name? Does anybody remember his name?
Jesse.
And then Jesse had a baby, and his name was David. And they kept having babies on down through the generations till they had another Joshua. His name was Jesus. And so this woman that was a prostitute among the Amorites who worshipped gods that required living sacrifices of people and their kids, actually became the one lady in that generation that continued the promise of Abraham down to Jesus. And now we participate. We are here tonight because that prostitute hung that scarlet cord in her window. You know, and this ain't over yet. This ain't over yet. There are a lot of people out there. There are a lot of people out there that just need to see the works of God and have a couple of spies show up and tell them, hey, listen, walls are going to fall down tomorrow, but if you want to hang this scarlet cord in your window, if you'll put your faith in God. And it's really interesting. The New Testament talks about Rahab three times. It talks about her here in Matthew, where she becomes one of the great grand. By the way, that connection she's connected to Ruth, who is a Moabite, and she's also connected to Tamar in that lineage, who had two kids incestually. And also down in the lineage, everybody knows this, the four women that are mentioned there in Matthew are women who should not be there. They're all Gentiles, all the way down through there. And so it's just a view of how God knew that he was going to use Abraham to get out of Israel into the other nations. But anyway, she's mentioned three times. She's mentioned there in Matthew, but she's also mentioned in Hebrews. And she's mentioned in Hebrews in the book of faith, in the hall of faith. And, you know, it starts, it says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not yet seen. And it starts talking, it says, Abraham, he received a promise. And remember we talked about him, he was promised that there would be that nation. But he was also promised that he would never see it. He would die in an old age. But when the iniquity was full, he would bring him back. So it talks about Abraham, talks about Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, goes all the way through. You know the last great hero of faith that's mentioned specifically with a story? It's Rahab. Rahab is in this lineage. They didn't talk about Joshua. Talks about Rahab. And it says, because she believed God. Simply because she believed God. She didn't sacrifice a calf. She didn't clean up her house. She believed that God would deliver her. And she put her faith in him. And so, we need to realize, good people of God, nation of God, family of God, kingdom of God, there are a lot of people that are on the edge of destruction. It's not just that God will save them. God will also condemn them to eternal separation if they don't walk into the kingdom through faith. So, if anything, I want this to be an encouragement to really believe that judgment is coming. Not so you'll be scared, but so you can be like, first of all, Rahab resting, hey, my cord's hanging in the window. And God says that he will see it. And in the story, three times it comes up. Don't you kill that woman. Hey, you two guys, go find that woman. You are secure from destruction when you are resting in the finished work of Christ. But we're also sent. We're also supposed to be a blessing to other nations. Not other good people but other people who are serving gods that are twisting their lives into stupidity. The end.